Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pinier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. The trial of 22 people accused of involvement in the July violence in the Karakalpakstan Sovereign Republic started on November 28th in the city of Bukhara. Karakalpakstan's a large area, rich in oil and gas, located in the western part of what is today Uzbekistan. Protests started in late June when people in Karakalpakstan discovered a draft of the constitutional amendments contained changes that would have stripped Karakalpakstan of its sovereign status and other privileges. On July 1st, there was a huge but peaceful protest in the regional capital, Nukus. Things turned violent when security forces attempted to disperse the demonstrators. At least 21 people were killed, more than 200 injured, and more than 500 people detained. A commission that included members of the government was formed to investigate the causes of the violence. Their investigation is focused on the demonstrators, though, as a recent Human Rights Watch report showed, police and security forces seem to have been responsible for some of the deaths and injuries. There have been many questions about the investigation and its findings. During the first days of the trial, most of the defendants confessed to being partially or completely guilty of charges that they helped organize mass unrest. Some even made a point of saying they were treated fairly after being detained, which gives the court proceedings the appearance of being staged. For this broadcast, I am joined by two people from Karakalpakstan who will offer a different interpretation of events than those being told in the Uzbek courtroom. Due to concerns for the safety of family and friends back in Karakalpakstan, our guests are using pseudonyms and their voices are being altered. I want to introduce and thank Aysulu Azatova and Mekset Saparov for being on the program. Thank you both. I'm going to start with Aysulu. Aysulu, I would like to hear your opinion about the trial that's underway right now in Bukhara. What are you seeing and what do you if you hear from anybody back in Karakalpakstan about what they think about it too?
Yeah, there are a number of issues with the trial in Bukhara. First of all, the distance between Nukus and Bukhara is 500 kilometers away, and the government, Uzbek government, informed public about the trial 17 hours before the actual trial, and it made it difficult for the families and friends and journalists to make it there. Also, it was they were saying that it's an open trial. In fact, it wasn't open trial. The live broadcast the first day was just horrible. But surprisingly, the recordings of some defendants when they were attacking each other, it was so clear. So I think even in this, Uzbek government tries to play and they try to mislead the public. Even in this small, tiny ways. And of course, it wasn't fair. And it is obvious that they were interrogated and both physically and mentally. I myself, some years ago, was in detention and I spent only 5 hours, but I got a taste of it. And it's clear that when the person is not guilty after being interrogated by so many people asking the same questions, you get so exhausted that you will start accepting whatever the law enforcement officers say. I was in detention with my friend and they tried to blame her for the crime. First, she was denying, but after several hours of interrogation by a number of people, they made a statement that you did it. You just said that you committed the crime. And she was so exhausted. She says, what? What did I say? And luckily I was by her and I said, no, she didn't say that. You are the one who are stating this information. So basically, Uzbek government, Uzbek law enforcement officers, they are trained so well in framing people, in making innocent to be guilty. And to begin with, this imprisonment was illegal. because both all of these people who are on the trial, they had a right for the protest. And it was a peaceful protest. And Davlet Murat Hajimuratov, he never encouraged people to be violent, but he reiterated a number of times that the protest should be peaceful. And they are accusing him in the violence. But in fact, it is Uzbek government who committed the crime. They are the ones who murdered innocent people. So they should be judged instead of this innocent people who are on a trial right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also want to get, Mekset, I want to get your opinion too. You've been watching the trials also. What are you seeing?
I think Aysel is right. It's some sort of metamorphosis going on. To common sense, you would think, actually, in democratic countries, you would see President Mirziyayev being accused, not the vice versa, but unfortunately, it's dictatorship. And this court, of course, it's staged show trial, and they got all core people, as they think, who is vocal about the independence of Karakalpakstan, for even the fact that the judge, his name is Yulubay Abibulayev, actually Davlet Murat Hajimuratov tried to recuse him from the trial because just last year he actually alleged him violating lot of laws himself, that judge. For instance, there is the videos actually still up there on the YouTube when he made a video when he, while this Yulubay Abibulayev, the judge, was in the one of the regions, he showed how he stole state properties and used it, embezzled the even like a building materials for the new court building, use it as a labor pupil of state workers or state agencies workers in his own house. And on the top of it, he hid the fact that he has the house, private house, and actually received stipend from the state, saying he is living in renting an apartment. He accused all of these things in the past, and the same judge is right now is judging him on very, very heavy accusations here. And as he pointed out during his speech, this is the political trial. It's unfair. And he also pointed out that none of his papers he applied to different agencies, organizations, international organizations went out. He was blocked out from the outside world, and he couldn't get correspondence, mail from the outside, leave alone that he was unhappy with the advocate who was appointed by the state. And we actually, as a activist here, try to get advocate for him to provide him proper legal defense. And there was no access to talk to him or to pass the message to him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. So the judge and Hajimuratov already have a history, and people have pointed out that should have disqualified the judge from this case, right?
Yes. Any other country, even average kind of, even trying to be as democratic, they wouldn't allow that thing. But this is the blatantly ignoring this fact.
Right. And I'm also curious too, you and other people tried to organize a lawyer for Hajimuratov, and it didn't work, what they wouldn't accept the lawyer, or how did that work? So that he had to take the state attorney, even though there was efforts to try to get him a more impartial defender?
We tried to contact him, provide the at least to meet them so they can decide who gonna be their advocates. We are not like pushing our options, but we couldn't get, there wasn't access to him at all during the, except they say families, but we didn't believe that families have access because they had to say just for self-preservation things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sulu, let's bring it over to you. Okay, we've been talking about Dawlet Murad, Taci Muratov. He's being portrayed by the prosecutor as probably the main organizer of all this kind of unrest. Now, in the first days of the trial, as we know, most of the defendants that testified, it basically admitted that they did what the prosecutor said that they were supposed to have done. So they admitted their guilt and went on. But when Taci Muratov got a chance to testify, to make a statement, his statement was very different. And I was wondering if you could kind of tell me a little bit about that. What did he say in the courtroom happened to him?
Taci Muratov said what happened to him since the day of his arrest. He was beaten brutally and he was tortured. People were bouncing on his head and he lost his conscience. Also, they tried to twist his fingers, almost breaking them. And so he spoke about these tortures. And also he mentioned while he was beaten up so brutally, when he turned back, he saw that the back of Azamat Turdanov was torn. Even though for some reason Azamat is not complaining about the tortures, and that's understandable. I also want to say that I do not blame Azamat Lola Gul for denying the torture, because law enforcement officers, they threatened them and their families, and who in the right of their mind will praise the prison. Lola Gul, she was saying that the prison is great, they are feeding her, but if you read between the lines, she is signaling, she is saying SOS, help me, you know. But I don't know if international media and human rights organizations are picking it up, that her praising the prison does not mean that actually she is being treated well. And also, the interesting observation after Dawlet Murad's speech, you know, they stopped broadcasting. They started, they don't provide that option of live broadcasting. And that tells you that they're trying to cover up, because it didn't work to the scenario they played. They were so successful to convince Azamat Turdanov, Lola Gul, to play according to their script, and Dawlet Murad, he ruined it. And after that, they stopped the live broadcast.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of the points I wanted to make. Was this trial actually was being broadcast live? People could watch it until after Taci Murad's testimony. And then I was wondering if it was still not being broadcast live. In fact, there's less reporting coming out of Uzbekistan, and even the members of the commission that were on Twitter seem to have been certainly not posting as much about the what's going on with the trial. Mekset, are you surprised that Taci Muratov actually said this when he was in the courtroom? And then are you surprised that all of a sudden they decided they wouldn't continue broadcasting this the courtroom proceedings live?
Dawlet Murad, Taci Muratov, truly hero of his people, hero of our people. He said, release all these people, have me, and I'm ready to sacrifice my life, my every being for my people, he said. He's like historic figure he loves, he adores, is Aliyar Dusnazarov. By the way, today, December 8th, Aliyar Dusnazarov, the day when Aliyar Dusnazarov was shot by Soviet NKVD. So it's a lot of parallels. Also, I can do the parallels with what happened in Andijan events 2005, if you remember, there was open source, there was a staged trial, there was all people confessing and thing, and there was just one woman spoiled that thing. By the way, there wasn't like a smartphones, YouTube that time, but we were receiving all this thing by reports from the courtroom, and one woman spoiled that thing, and they closed after that. That woman, for instance, said, "I was prepared to lie to you here by the law enforcement. She said, I cannot do in my conscience that because there is a guy." They were actually blaming all people who died as the terrorist, actually. And she said, I cannot do that in memory of the guy who actually died saving my daughter in the crowd. He laid on the top of my daughter to cover her, and he got the bullet and he died in front of my eyes, she said, and I cannot do that. And after that, they stopped the broadcasting that court outside. Same thing happening in here. It's except one difference is President Karimov, after investigation, even from outside of Uzbekistan, he was banned from all Western countries, from all European countries, and he had to get special permission to go into the Germany to get treatment. They gave him like an exception, and not only him, all his surroundings who is involved in government in that time, they were banned from that too. But that thing is not happening in Karkalpak case. I think the reason of that, times are changing. For dictators, hard to keep power on their hands because all the technology things, all the globalization things, and what global community is not realizing, that is the dictators are changing too. They are adapting too. They are not like dictators like we used to see Ceausescu or Picasso. If you remember this dictator, they are not like that anymore. They adapting, and they know what to say. They know what kind of, they can create the appearance of democracy, even not changing anything. They adapting to that. If you see European organization of European Union, that's what it's called. So they went after that even and did the business deal with the president. Russia gave one of the big honors medal, Nevsky medal to Mirziyayev. So it's, we have to realize that too. And I'm not surprised that they started confessing on everything. And personally, from my personal experience, I can tell they are very crafty when it comes to the torturing, getting confession from you. They put that on scientific level, how they can do that. I can tell from my own experience. And let's say even like two people beating you up, third person is watching you, so you won't pass out. You won't pass out, because when you're getting that torture, you would actually dream to pass out because you wouldn't feel anything, but they wouldn't let you. There would be always watcher and stops when you come into that point. So therefore, I'm not surprised that they're admitting all kind of guilt there. And other than that, they can be heroes all they want, but there is the one thing. There is a tight family. In our culture, we keep close, keep tight our families, and even though you can sacrifice your life, but you don't feel you have right to sacrifice your brothers, sisters, mothers, and your other family members. That not everybody can go over that.
Okay, thank you. Well, we've got to the halfway point in the program. It's time for me to remind that this is the Medjlis podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Medjlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. We're talking today about the ongoing trial of 22 people allegedly involved in the July violence in the Karakalpakstan Sovereign Republic in the western part of what is today Uzbekistan. And my guests are Mekset Saparov and Aysulu Azatova. You know, let's move away from Bukhara and the trial for a minute. You're both in touch with people back in this area. So can you tell me, since July 1st and to this day, what is the situation like in Karakalpakstan? What's the mood of the people out there? Aysulu, can you start?
Yes, the people are in a lot of pain. They feel like they're abandoned. The international community did not came to the rescue. You know, they turned their blind eye to the issues, and EU countries, the US, they boast about democracy, for standing up for democratic values. But and people feel like they naively believed. Even Lola Gol, you know, she openly, just before her arrest, she posted a video of telling that there is a high possibility that she will be imprisoned, and she asked international organizations to help her. But unfortunately, the civilized world, the Western countries, instead of keeping Uzbekistan accountable for major human rights violations, they started closing deals with them. They started praising them. Basically, people are upset, and they are scared. It's so much fear because the phones are censored. They cannot openly talk. They have to use the secret words, you know, that only certain people will understand. So it's a lot of fear and frustration on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Mekset, let's go to you. And it's pretty much the same thing. What are you hearing from the ground? But I also want to mention, too, that, you know, and it has been brought up before, that President Mirziyoyev actually has paid a lot more attention to Karakalpakstan than certainly his predecessor, Islam Karimov. You know, I was double checking some of this information on that, and he has gone out to the region several times. He does talk about it. Is the general view of people that in Karakalpakstan, at least the people that you know, that he really is the person that's responsible for the problems in Karakalpakstan and the course of this trial process in Bukhara?
Of course, they are not. Even if they don't speak, actually, they have no doubt because they witnessed it all this thing. I guess a lot of people cannot be stupid. And of course, he is the blame. And if he pays attention to the Karakalpakstan, he pays attention to the natural resource of Karakalpakstan. And he's just keeping quiet enough so can pull more from the... We talking so much about the. Aysulu was right about his connection to Russia and Russian oligarch as well. So he is providing a lot of gas to Putin from Karakalpakstan. Actually, this project few years ago won international business reward for how profitable this business was, because giving nothing in exchange, taking everything from the people. Western countries have to realize that's the gas in big part from Karakalpakstan that Putin uses as leverage against Europe.
This is because Russian companies are running this gas site, right? This is where this is one of the Lukoil or Gazprom operations, correct?
Yes, Gazprom. Russia, and there is they created branch of the Uzbekistan Gazprom, and they they have so many derricks that pulling that thing, and they right now I think providing 150 million cubic gas per year with the increasing for long years up to 300 million cubic meter gas to Russia.
I know I've been watching the news about the development of the oil and gas industry out in Qoraqalpaqstan, and I agree it's an invaluable place, certainly for the Uzbek government. There's a lot of money to be made there. But to bring it back to Qoraqalpaqstan and the situation for the people a little bit too, have you heard that? What's the presence of security forces like in Qoraqalpaqstan after July? Is there noticeably more police, other members of security agencies that are out there on the street to make sure that there's not a repeat of what happened in July? Is that something that people see?
There is a lot of security present there because December 1st was the National Language Day, Qoraqalpak Language Day in Qoraqalpakistan, never been celebrated before. They're afraid those holidays then trigger something else. And upcoming December 14th is the Constitution Day of Qoraqalpakistan. And today, day when was shot, actually, Dosnazar Aliyarov, I mentioned before, who was shot by, killed by NKVD, people attribute to him Qoraqalpakistan being state. He proved to the Stalin that time that Qoraqalpak people are not Uzbeks, not the Kazakhs, not anything else. They are the separate people, and that's why actually during the Soviet time, Qoraqalpakistan got the status of autonomous republic.
Yeah, Bruce, also, if I can get my feedback regarding President Mirziyoyev. Some people praise him for doing a lot of good to Qoraqalpakistan, but he is so skillful in his crimes against Qoraqalpak people. While he was trying to do physical improvements, he appointed people like the Minister of Health in Qoraqalpakstan. He is ethnically Uzbek person, and there are so many other ministers are ethnically Uzbek. And the average life expectancy in Qoraqalpakstan 55 years. You know, they are trying to. They're trying to kill people in one way or the other. And also, I know people personally who had two children, and after having two children, the state nurse will come to their house and insert intrauterinal device so they will not get pregnant. There is this unwritten rule that you cannot have more than two children. And I know families whose unborn child was ripped off of their body, and also they lost their uterine. And during the protests, also, it was very barbaric on the law law enforcement officers. They were snipers on the high-rise building, and they were targeting male genitals. The hospitals were packed with people who were injured in their private parts, and the hospitals were not ready to provide this help to treat them. The medical field is so undeveloped in Qoraqalpakstan, and I think it's intentionally so people will not get the right treatment. And also, you know, the president appoints leaders that are going to support him fully. Even the head of Joharlikinyes is elected by the Uzbek government. The Qoraqalpak people cannot elect their own leader. And the ministerial level people are non-Qoraqalpak. So there is a lot of injustice that's happening there. And the main purpose is to just get rid of Qoraqalpak people, to eliminate them as a nation. And even during Mirziyayev's time, they were trying to change Qoraqalpak signs on the street. into Uzbek. You know, in our own land, we cannot even have signs written in our own language. They are forcing Uzbek language on us. And also, while I'm in Nukus, you know, I noticed that they're trying to bring Uzbeks from other parts of Uzbekistan, whether it is businesses, they are helping them to settle down in Karakalpakstan. You know, while local Karakalpak people, they don't get any incentives to start business, to flourish. And it's really heartbreaking what Uzbek government is doing.
I agree with ICE law. It's not only natural resources. They see in Karakalpakstan as milking cow, not only in terms of natural resources, but they selling ecological disaster there and getting a lot of money from there too. None of it reaching Karakalpakstan actually. If you, I don't know if people remember 2003, I think the Secretary of UN, Goodyear, before going away, he visited the Aral Sea disaster area, and he was shocked by the scene there. It was like a very, he was shocked, and he pledged help to the Aral region. Of course, all the money went to the Uzbekistan, and none of them reached to Karakalpakstan.
Thank you. You know, a couple more questions because we are starting to run out of time here. The first one is, obviously people in Karakalpakstan are not talking about what happened in July openly, but you got to think this is a big topic of conversation out there. Are they discussing what happened in July, what's happening now at the trials, and what are they saying to, as far as you know?
They are very scared to discuss, and even among themselves, neighbors, because the Uzbek government, they put so much pressure on the people, and they saw what happened to the people who spoke up about the injustice. You know, people, even among themselves, they are afraid to discuss because of the fear that these people might report to KGB and they might be imprisoned. So people, I think they are keeping it to themselves. They know that it's not a fair trial. They know that none of these people are guilty. And so basically people are not able to express themselves because in Uzbekistan, if you express yourself, you will be in jail.
I think Aislu is right, and people can connect dots watching all this thing. For instance, one of the 22 who going through trial is Shamshetov, who is actually son of the Davlatbay Shamshetov, who was actually first president of Republic Karakalpakstan. I'm not misspeaking. President. It was a president at first when we've got the declared our independence. By the way, when we declared independence, Uzbekistan was still part of Soviet Union when we declared. So Uzbekistan was independent Uzbekistan few years later after Karakalpakstan. So in terms of the state of the countries, Karakalpakstan is was born earlier as independent country than Uzbekistan, and the, Shamshetov was president, and that was the person who was standing up for sovereignty of Karakalpak people. When ISLU and I say Karakalpak people, we mean everybody in Karakalpakstan, not ethnically Karakalpak people. Uzbek, Kazakhs, and they are a Karakalpak pupil. So he was vocal. He was standing up against that time President Karimov. For instance, there was the cases when Jurabekov was his prime minister, and he would drop on the airplane on the one of the southern regions and would change the governor of the region, Davlatbay Shamshetov, would go there and confront that prime minister, saying it's our internal business to change our governors in Uzbekistan. Therefore, he was like a dismantled, and the title president was taken away by the people close to family. Actually, they say they poisoned him. It was very close to Litvinenko style death. He was healthy, first of all, and he got sick, and in 1 month he was gone, and they even didn't let them see the body. Actually, there was a security forces actually guarding the body before the burial.
Okay, and we're going to get down to the last one, because we are pretty close to being out of time here at the moment. And I'll start with you, Mekset. You know, Uzbek President Mirziyoyev promised that there would not be any changes to the constitutional articles on Qoraqalpakstan's status as a sovereign republic. The attempt to change those articles was what caused all these problems in the first place. We still haven't seen a new version of the proposed amendments to the constitution. It's been held up ever since the violence in July. Do the people in Qoraqalpakstan feel reassured by President Mirziyoyev promising that they won't, that Qoraqalpakstan will not lose its status as a sovereign republic?
I think it doesn't matter now, because we realize there is a reasons, there is a triggers does do this event, this kind of things. So it's the changing the article was actually a trigger. And before even that, I think Davletmurat Tajumurat very representative of what people think. For instance, on the trial, he said, "You think you're putting this on rest by doing this? It's never going to happen," he said. "We always going to rebel. Qoraqalpak people always going to rebel for their freedom. This is not ending here," what he said on the trial. And people believe him, people respect him, people know him, actually, because he's daily online putting content as a blogger.
Okay, Aysulu, what are you hearing? The president promised that they wouldn't change the status of Qoraqalpakstan. Does that make anybody feel any better in Qoraqalpakstan that they won't lose that status?
No, it doesn't make them feel any better, because that sovereignty is still just on the paper. Qoraqalpak people, they cannot even elect their own leaders. They cannot even have signs in their own territory. What kind of independence is that? So it's just on the paper, and we have more law enforcement officers that are on the ground that are that came from outside of Qoraqalpakstan. So there is more control because the government will try to prevent any uprise in the future protests. So I wouldn't say that people are happy that he's not changing, because people lost their family members they're not happy.
Okay, well, then I'll give you each, if you can, very quickly, if you have any last statement, any last comments you want to make in about 2 minutes. And I'll start with you. Okay, Mekset, go ahead. Do you have anything you want to say that we didn't cover here?
Yes, I would like to congratulate Qoraqalpak people with the Day of Qoraqalpak Language, December 1st. And upcoming Day of Constitution, December 14th, I encourage them to go and celebrate their holidays. That is their freedom. It shouldn't be dependent from other neighboring country. As other activists says, Qoraqalpakstan, not Uzbekistan. Qoraqalpakstan is not Uzbekistan.
Okay, Aysulu?
Yes, I want to clarify a message for international communities. I think most of them are misled. I read some articles in German, in Spanish, and I want to bring some clarification. So Qoraqalpakstan signed a 20-year agreement with Uzbekistan. This agreement guaranteed the republic's constitutional right to withdraw via referendum from Uzbekistan. According to that agreement, after 20 years, the parties would either extend the agreement or Karakalpak will hold a referendum on leaving Uzbekistan. So that agreement has expired. Basically, we have all the right to be independent, and most of the people in Karakalpakstan support independence. And Karakalpakstan is very tolerant to other ethnic groups, be it Kazakhs, Uzbeks, Uyghurs, Kyrgyz, Russians, and Ukrainians. You know, we are very friendly, and all of them in one voice, they say they want independence. Even in the protests, people who participated, they represented different people's group. And I want also urge the leaders of civilized countries to help Karakalpakstan to be independent and create the oasis for core democratic values, rule of law, freedom of speech and assembly, pursuit of happiness, common good, and diversity. And Karakalpakstan, in return, will provide natural gas to Europe and some other countries. So please support us. We are in desperate need, and we want more intervention. We want international investigation of the crimes committed in Karakalpakstan, because what's happening right now in Bukhara, it's a circus. It wasn't fair. So I just urge everyone to press for Uzbekistan to conduct independent investigation.
I just want to add that is, as a lot of people think, it's not internal issue of Uzbekistan. It's international issue between countries. Please help Karakalpak people.
If I can say in Karakalpak language to my dear, precious Karakalpak people, Karakalpaklarım, tuzkanlar, bizler birikende bir bolamız, bölüngende kulaymız, ağız birşilik bolsın, soğan iltimas etip soranaman.
Thank you very much for that. And, you know, unfortunately, we are out of time. But certainly we'll keep our eye on the trial. The sentences haven't been passed yet, so the proceedings are still going on, and watch to the best of our abilities through the means that are available to us, since they've kind of gone quiet in recent days. And I want to give a thank you to Aysulu and Mekset for being on this program today. A big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mejlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C., and a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mejlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting RFARL's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.